We're talking about shame in this hour. And so far, we've considered the soul-savaging, reputation-destroying aspects of public shaming. But can shame also be used for public good? There's a judge in Texas who's famous for his creative and very controversial shame-based sentences. To hear how they work, let's go back to Thanksgiving evening, 1996, Houston, Texas. That's the night 18-year-old Mike Hubachek slammed his Mustang convertible into a minivan belonging to the Davis family. The crash pretty much cut the van in half. It killed Barbara Davis's husband and their nanny, and it almost killed Barbara, too. Police later estimated that Hubachek had been driving nearly 100 miles an hour and that his blood alcohol content was twice the legal limit. So now, let's hear what Mike Hubachek remembers about that night.
On November 1996, I was started drinking that afternoon around 3 o'clock. We were, I guess, having a party at the time. I was drinking often. Somewhere around 10 o'clock that night, I blacked out. Next thing I remember, I woke up in the hospital, and I was confused. I was scared. I didn't know what was going on. And one of the police officers at the time was there, said we need his blood, and I didn't want to give my blood. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know how I got there. And, you know, one of the officer looked at me and was like, you know, who gives an F about you? You just killed two people. Oh. And instantly, like, I went into shock. I saw, I don't know, like, everything was, like, white. I remember just crying. I remember just being in a lot of fear and not knowing what to do next. I was, you know, I guess, in a hospital bed, and my family was out of town at the time. They came back in the town. Some friends asked me, you know, that showed up to the hospital, they asked me, you know, what do you need? And I basically just wanted to get out of the hospital. I didn't know what was going on. I got released. I tried to go home. There was camera crews at my house. There was, you know, people there wanting to know, you know, what happened, and I still was in a daze. I ended up going to a hotel, and when I was in the hotel, I saw the evening news, and on the news, basically, my accident was on the lead story, and I just remember just crying and being scared and not, you know, being an 18-year-old kid and not knowing, you know, what to do next.
Yeah. And you still don't have any memory of that night itself, of the accident?
No, ma'am.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've tried remembering. I've tried, you know, forcing myself to remember. You know, I know my attorneys did accident recreations. They've done, you know, studies and tried to figure out, you know, everything that went on. There was witnesses to my direct right and left that never saw the vehicle either. And if at the time I was drunk and speeding, so it was my fault.
Mm. So you wound up pleading no contest to intoxicated manslaughter, and you wound up sentenced to 10 years in prison. What were those first few days in prison like? Did you feel like you were still pretty much in shock?
Basically, at the time I had Judge Poe. He was known as, you know, a strict judge. My case was on his docket, but his docket worked very quickly for cases in Texas.
And Judge Poe this is the guy, the Texas judge, who's famous for his creative sentences. Like, there was a teenager who stole a Nintendo game. His sentence was he was forced to ring bells for the Salvation Army. There was a guy who stole guns from the actor Clayton Moore, the guy who played the Lone Ranger on TV. He was sentenced to spend 600 hours cleaning the Houston Police Department stables. So Judge Poe wound up giving you one of his quote-unquote creative, shame-based solutions. What all did he tell you had to do?
I had to serve the 6 months at TDC. And when I got out of there, I had to I went back in front of the judge, and they ended up telling me my terms of my probation. They gave me 2,000 hours community service. I had to carry pictures of the victims in my wallet. I had to place flowers on the grave sites for the next 10 years. I had to pay $10 a week to a memorial fund. I had to carry a sign on Westheimer where the accident happened that said I killed two people while driving drunk on Westheimer. And, you know, along with other conditions of probation.
That's a lot. Wow. What was your reaction to that sentence?
I guess at first I was angry, and then as like time went on, I started to understand why he gave me the structure and gave me the accountability I needed to succeed. And he was smart enough and understanding enough to take into account the whole situation. I deal a lot with judges today, and a lot of them, the easy solution is locking somebody up and saying, you know, go spend your time in jail and get out and commit and do the same thing, versus mm-hmm. trying to rehabilitate somebody and get them to be a productive member of society.
So of all those things that he told you you had to do, which was the most difficult?
I think it's I guess the most difficult is the one you're actually doing, you know, and then when you're done, I guess some people perceive it as, oh, it's meant to be a constant reminder of what happened. It's like I constantly, even today, still remember, you know, what I did and what brought me here, the accident. I live every day of my life knowing that I took two other lives. You know, having to carry a sign or having to carry pictures on the wall, it doesn't make me remember even more, you know. Mm-hmm. I truly was remorseful. And some of it was just, you know, the sign carrying and stuff like that was more public awareness, you know.
Public awareness or public shaming? I mean, was the shame part of the punishment?
I understood, I guess, maybe that the fact that I was out there carrying the sign and doing some of that stuff, that hopefully would prevent somebody else from doing what I did. Mm. I don't know if it was really shameful in what I was doing, but more understanding that there was a purpose behind it.
How did people react when you were on the high side of the highway carrying your sign?
95% of the people were positive.
And really?
You know, they would say, God bless you, or, you know, it's, you know, this too shall pass type stuff.
So they didn't roll down their car windows and spit at you or yell at you or something?
No, but there was also plenty of police presence and security and stuff like that, that the judge and the probation department took my safety into consideration also. Mm-hmm. And if at any point they felt unsafe for me, they would have pulled me out of it.
I guess I was thinking that the parts that were the public parts, you know, the showing up at the graveyard and the carrying a sign in public, I guess I was thinking that it's a way of forcing somebody to really feel accountable for what they did. I mean, because we all have layers of defenses. I mean, just because you put somebody in a jail cell doesn't mean that they'll spend any time thinking about what they did, whereas it's a little hard to walk, you know, up and down past the accident site carrying a sign that says you killed somebody and not think about it. Do you know what I mean?
Most of the people that I've spoken with that have been in my position, it's something that it's a constant reminder for them. That if they look in the mirror, they know what happened. It's something you live the rest of your life doing. You know, I struggled with the idea with God. If I survived my accident as a, you know, a living purgatory, that the easier solution would have been to die. I felt like at times that the struggles I had in life and so on, da da da, were, you know, just God punished me for the actions I took, and that, you know, the easy solution would have been to die. And if I kept going and living and doing everything, then it was a harder solution. But in reality,
do you think
at times I did. I mean, it's something I've got out of through processing, through treatment and recovery. But I don't know if it's like survivor's guilt or what. But I struggled with a long time of why I lived and other people died. I had to understand and come to a belief that I lived for a reason, and that reason, you know, what was instilled in me by people around me and so on, was to be of service for others and to share my message and to share the idea of, you know, people can recover.
Mike, thank you so much for for sharing the grace with which you've dealt with all of this. Thanks. And thanks for, spending time with us.
Okay, no problem.
Mike Hubacek turned his life around after receiving a creative, shame-based sentence for killing two people while driving drunk. He now runs a halfway house called Sober Living in Houston.